The clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, Excused, Boone, Bruin, Minnis, Excuse for Business of the House, Nolan.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Vic Gilliam.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony today will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Representative Crummel.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't know I was that fast. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to extend courtesies to Garrett Gwynn, who is a student at Gilkey International Middle School in Portland. He is interested in national politics, but is here today to kind of get an insider's view of the Oregon politics. And so he is working in my office today and tomorrow, and he will be attending Sunset High School next fall. He enjoys sports, primarily basketball, and is a great guitar player and speaks French and Spanish. So welcome to Garrett, and for his help, I will appreciate in my office. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much, Representative Crummel. And I'm going to do a blanket introduction of all the Gilkey Middle School interns who are here today. So I'd like them all to stand up. Interns, if you could stand up, we'll recognize you all at once. Sorry we won't be introducing you each individually. It's great to have you here for your internship. I hope you learn a great deal and help us make some good decisions today. Thank you very much. And so, colleagues, I would ask you not to do individual introductions of your interns for the sake of business of the chamber. Representing Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. wanted to ask that we extended courtesies of the House and also a happy birthday wish to my legislative aide, Daniel Patrick Baum. Often you'll see him harassing me, and today I get to actually have you just do a slight bit of embarrassment of him. Thank you.
Welcome. Good to have you. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to introduce a couple of honorary pages. The first is Carissa Hill. Carissa goes to Sublimity, which is Sublimity Middle School, which is one of my many little towns that I have in my district. She likes volleyball, dance team, track, soccer, writing, and math, and she is a member of Honor Society and wishes to be an actress. The second one is Christina McDonald, also from Sublimity. She's in eighth grade. She likes volleyball and band, and she aspires to be a lawyer and a teacher. I bid them welcome.
Thank you, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce my page, Kyle Brown, and he's from Forest Grove. He's the son of Dale and Gretchen Brown, age 13, a seventh grade at Neil Armstrong Middle School. He's in the orchestra. He plays basketball and is in a youth group, and he wants to be a computer technology expert. And that's great having him here because that's my field, and good luck to you. Mr. Speaker, I also, his grandfather is with us today, and I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Ralph Brown be granted privileges of the floor.
Representative Riley requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and former Representative Ralph Brown be granted privileges of the House and floor. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Wisnett. Representative Wisnett. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to extend a welcome to the 9th, 10th, and 11th grade classes with us today from North Clackamas Christian School in Oregon City. They're accompanied by their teacher, Jan Madsen. Please join me in giving a welcome to them to the Capitol today.
Great. It's good to have you here. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce an honorary page here from Medford, Oregon, Matt Gervais, son of Robert and Karen Gervais. Matthew is a ninth grader, age 15th, at St. Mary's School in Medford, which is a parochial school there. He enjoys academics, basketball, golf, choir, and is applying for the National Honor Society. His future goals, which I may have to talk to him about, is thinking about getting into community service. So maybe someday he'll be on this floor introducing other people from Medford, we hope. Thanks.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to extend courtesies to the House to our honorary page for the day. Yes, you can stand, Christy. Christy Frazier, who is an eighth grader at Cracksburger Middle School in Gladstone, very active in soccer, and Job's Daughters and Sons and Daughters of the Oregon Pioneers. Welcome.
Are there further courtesies? It's my pleasure to announce that today is Representative Vicki Berger's birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Representative Berger. Are there further courtesies? Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform that he has approved and signed the following bills, House Bill 2031 and 2707.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform that he has signed House Bill 2707, 2031, and Senate Bill 426.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2069 relating to forestry seed. House Bill 2258 relating to payment of wages on regular paydays. House Bill 2437 relating to vehicle dealer certificates. House Bill 2470 relating to livestock. House Bill 2593 relating to public employee retirement.
Bills read second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2232 relating to delinquent property tax returns and prescribing an effective date permits county boards of property tax appeals to waive penalties for first-time delinquent real property or combined tax returns.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2232. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. House Bill 2232, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill in short summary.
House Bill 2322, relating to courts and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2322A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Representative Lim votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Kremel votes aye. House Bill 2322A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 2362, relating to proceedings in probate courts, requires that petitions, reports, and accounts and proceedings before probate court must include declaration under penalty or perjury in lieu of notarized verification.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2362A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. House Bill 2362A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 89, relating to temporary transfer of water rights, extends sunset on pilot project allowing temporary transfer of water rights in certain irrigation districts.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 89. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenluck, how do you vote? Greenluck votes aye. Senate Bill 89, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill in summary.
Senate Bill 269, relating to forms used in domestic relations actions, requires state court administrator to prescribe contents and forms of specific documents used in domestic relations actions. Remove statutory forms.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 269. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Lim votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Greg Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 269, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2096, relating to housing.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2096. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring you House Bill 2096 from our Committee on Consumer Protection, and followed by a referral to the Revenue Committee, where it has been passed to us unanimously. That is from Consumer Protection. 2096 relates to manufactured housing parks here in Oregon. There are over 1,300 manufactured housing parks in Oregon. Many of these parks are considered to be part of Oregon's affordable housing stock. Many parks have been lost due to pressure to sell brought on by increasing land values. Now, this bill, 2096, would enable preservation of a given park by enabling current residents to secure financing and competitively bid for the park in which they reside, provide incentives for private lenders to finance the nonprofit cooperative by making loans less risky, revise existing housing law by changing the definition of elderly from 58 years to 55 to comply with federal definitions, and allow the Department of Housing and Community Services to provide gap financing loans and loan guarantees of up to 50% of the loan under this bill. Now, how this bill accomplishes that is by it creates nonprofit cooperatives for manufactured home park residents, and it allows residents to collectively purchase the park from the owner. This creates a more even playing field for manufactured home residents. It allows residents to reinvest in and benefit from owning the land their home sits on. When residents own part of the land, it contributes to their equity and their ability to build assets, allowing their dwelling to appreciate rather than or allowing their dwelling to appreciate rather than depreciate to zero, as is the case when the dwelling sits on traditionally rented land. This bill further allows the Department of Housing and Community Services to assist parks that are significantly comprised of low-income residents, rather than requiring that the parks to which assistance is allocated be exclusively low-income. Preservation of these parks is far less expensive than building new affordable housing, and park owners, and this is an important point, are not disadvantaged by the co-ops because they still receive a fair market price for their land. Additionally, under current law, owners may receive a state capital gains tax waiver by selling to the co-op as opposed to a private developer. This will, without mandates, encourage owners to sell to co-ops, thus preserving an important affordable housing option. And that's it for my statement. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Nathanson.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to begin with a quote from someone speaking for the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund. Manufactured housing communities represent the largest source of unsubsidized affordable housing in the country. Unfortunately, it has been somewhat invisible until it actually started disappearing. There are nearly 800 manufactured homes in my district, and anywhere from several hundred to several thousand in other districts around the state. Manufactured home parks have been closing. Homeowners are being evicted. This is not a theoretical problem. It's here. When Oregon first started legislating to help mobile home park tenants, most mobile homes were just that. They were mobile. They could be moved. In the intervening decades, the mobile homes have aged, the structures have weakened, building codes have changed, and the manufactured home industry grew. These affordable homes are now built in factories and moved to a site. Many of the older and newer mobile or manufactured homes are really not movable. Is a nonprofit cooperative a good idea? I'm certain it is. It's not uncommon for two or more individuals to share resources and jointly purchase property for investment. This is an even more valuable use of the concept of shared ownership. The value of owning one's own home and then joining with others to own the land on which their homes are located. Two business points that may interest you, one legal and one financial. Because this bill sets up a condition of nonprofit association, if the association ever decides to sell the park, it will stay in nonprofit status, and the money stays in nonprofit use with the intent of preserving affordable housing. And secondly, financing mobile homes and these park purchases is very difficult because the homes are considered personal property subject to conventional interest rates of 12 to 13%. With the homes being attached to the property now, jointly through the cooperative, then the homes can truly be treated as homes and eligible for more realistic loans, real estate loans, just like mortgages, with rates at about 5 or 6%. Let's help these park residents be treated as the homeowners they really are. We say we value home ownership. We should be prepared not only to encourage home ownership, but to help people keep the homes they already own in the neighborhoods in which they already live. Moving is often not a viable option, either financially or logistically. The home may not be movable, and even if it were able to be moved, there are fewer and fewer places to move it to. And even if there were a place to move it to, all of those investments that the homeowners have made in landscaping, carports, street lighting, and building up years of friendships and mutual neighborhood support would be lost. This housing is important for seniors, and it's important for working families. National sources show that the average household size is over two people, about 2.3, and slightly more than half are employed full-time. Preserving affordable housing is far less expensive than developing new affordable housing. I can't think of a better way to ensure that people can work together to keep their home and to keep their neighborhood. I'm supporting this bill to take a modest step in helping to preserve affordable housing and neighborhoods. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise before you today to support House Bill 2096. As you know, this is an issue not just around mobile homes but around affordable housing in general in our state. And this has been an ongoing issue, especially over the last 3 years, but I think it was actually going on a lot before that. It just hadn't really risen to a high level of attention. This bill has been developed as in collaboration with local partners and with part of the coalition, and this bill also is a piece of the puzzle that we have been working on over the course of the last 2 years to bring about the affordable housing. It is later on, I'm hoping we will see on this floor House Bill 2600 and House Bill 2735, which are also pieces of the puzzle, or a mushed together version of those two bills. But so I just wanted to point out that this is part of that package, and this is a piece of the puzzle. This is a bill that's going to provide some of the solutions through that we started in the 2005 session. And as I mentioned, it complements what's already been worked on. This is going to enhance our current elderly and disabled bond program through OHCS. It will also allow the department to utilize its current loan and guarantee program for up to 50% of a loan. And it's going to authorize formation of manufactured dwelling parks, nonprofit cooperatives. And you may have seen in the news over the weekend that there was a, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but here in Oregon, it's in Corvallis, excuse me, that a mobile home park owner and the tenants have agreed on a purchase by the tenants, and the department has played a role in that. And this bill is going to help further those types of roles. I think, you know, when a mobile home park closes, the people are going to have to move. And some may move into another mobile home park, but one of the questions they have, of course, is the rent going to be affordable? And some may move to an apartment complex as opposed to relocating their home. But again, where is the affordable rent going to be? And if they need to go into a nursing home or other assisted living type of facility, how long will it be before they spend down their resources and then are going to be reliant on us at the state level as well as the federal government for the housing that they're and care that they're going to need? So, Mr. Speaker, this is a good bill. It's a piece of the puzzle, and I do urge an aye vote on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise today in support of House Bill 2096. House District 44 in North and Northeast Portland has about a half dozen mobile home parks. 2 weeks before the Christmas holiday, I spent some time with residents at the Arbor Mobile Home Park, who a group of residents, about 100 residents, who were very scared about losing their homes because there was a plan afoot by a developer to purchase the park and build condominiums. That plan fell through, as many development plans eventually do if they don't have the right financing, but it was very difficult for me to stand in front of, at that time, future constituents and tell them that I had nothing to offer them in terms of relocation costs or anything like that. I support this bill today because it's one piece of the toolbox that we need here in the state to make sure that folks who are going to be dislocated from their mobile home parks have some options. And I hope, as Representative Crummell mentioned, that there will be another set of bills that many other bills coming this session that will strengthen our toolbox in terms of providing moving costs and other types of things that will actually make it less scary for folks when their park is going to be sold from underneath them. So I support this bill. I urge your aye vote and to support other bills that we will be seeing later in the session. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm enthusiastically supporting this bill, as this bill will allow, there's upside for the homeowners, there's upside for the park owners, upside for the community at large, and there is downside for virtually nobody. And I really enthusiastically support this and urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Dallum votes aye. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. House Bill 2096, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2675, relating to notice of teacher contract renewal.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2675. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the need for this bill was brought to my attention by an assistant principal in the Ben Lapine School District who came across this statutory discrepancy in her advanced school law class from the University of Oregon. At the time, the class was discussing laws that contradict each other with regard to education. This bill cleans up the language in ORS 342.835 to reflect the same date as in ORS 342.513. The first statute stipulates that a school board must notify a probationary teacher if they do not intend to renew his or her contract by April 1 of any year. And the second statute requires school boards to notify all teachers and administrators in its employ who are not contract teachers, as defined in statute, of its intentions of non-renewal by March 15. This second statute also refers to probationary teachers. So the question is, what date is the correct date? This is the big mystery. A decade ago, the legislature passed sweeping education reforms that included Senate Bill 880. Prior to Senate Bill 880, the date by which school boards were required to notify probationary teachers was April 1. After the education legislation passed, remnants of the old statute were not entirely deleted, and we were left with contradicting dates. Legislative Council confirmed that the discrepancy was indeed a technical mistake. After speaking with the Oregon School Board Association and the superintendent of Ben Lapine Schools, we found that school boards currently use the March 15 date. Although April 1 could give school boards more time to move or to notify probationary teachers, the timing of spring break does not allow boards to return from break and provide timely notification. Hence, House Bill 2675 changes the date from April 1 to March 15, the date that the school districts use today.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Burley, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? McPherson votes aye. House Bill 2675, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2679, relating to public employee retirement.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2679. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Currently a member of the individual account program of the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, OPSERP, can receive invested amounts in substantially equal installments paid over a period of 5, 10, 15, or 20 years in lieu of a lump sum payment. At the time the statute was drafted, it was anticipated that 20 years would be a sufficient amount of time for a payout. However, in the case of some public safety personnel retirees who retire in their early to mid-50s, a 20-year period may not be long enough as they will likely outlive the payment schedule. House Bill 2679 allows the member to receive vested amounts over a period that is equal to the anticipated lifespan of the member as actuarially determined by the Public Employees Retirement Board. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Carrier yield?
Yeah,
he does.
Representative, I just needed to know the position of the PERS with regard to this particular change within their system. Are they geared up for it, and have they estimated what kinds of things they would have to do to accommodate this set of retirees?
I believe so, yes. And they did not testify in committee to that. And I would like to also thank my friend from Ontario for coming from my office this morning and giving me a heads up on this subject in question. I believe so, yes. They were in the room when we had this discussion, and there was no opposition, no great concern. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
Seeing none.
Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of opinion the bill should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? McPherson votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. House Bill 2679, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 5043, relating to financial administration of the Department of State Lands, Appropriated Money, and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 5043A. Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, last week I brought you two great blockbuster budgets, the Columbia Gorge Commission and the Land Use Board of Appeals. This week I've outdone myself And for your approval, may I present the budget for the Department of State Lands. This amazing budget includes the Portland Harbor, the Coos Bay South Slough, the Common School Fund, unclaimed property, and the Attorney General's Office. So you'll want to listen closely for your favorite part of the bill. The department provides administrative support to the State Land Board, which is responsible for management of the Common School Fund assets. The department is responsible for statute by statute for programs such as removal fill and wetlands. It manages the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve and provides support for the National Heritage Advisory Council. The Subcommittee on Natural Resources approved a total budget of $43.7 million and 106.5 FTE. Within this total budget, the general fund is increased by $31,734. Other funds expenditure limitation is increased $1.7 million, and federal funds expenditure limitation is increased $688,224 from the 05-07 approved budget. The subcommittee also approved $109.5 million in revenue distributions from the Common School Fund to the Department of Education, an increase of $38 million from the proposed budget resulting from increased earnings from investments. The subcommittee removed three policy packages related to substantive legislation for expedited wetland reports, water-related permits process improvement, implementation, and transfer of unclaimed property to the state treasurer for consideration of fiscal impacts at the time the measures are considered by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. The recommended budget provides $2.3 million other funds to address revenue generation, management of rangeland, fiscal accountability, and streamlined operations. It also provides $544,906 other funds to prepare detailed geographic information maps and documents related to the Portland Harbor contamination site and to seek advice on liability issues from the Attorney General. The budget maintains basic support for the National Heritage Program and continues current programs at South Slough. The subcommittee reviewed the agency's performance measures and approved continuation of 15 measures and replaced two measures with a new measure for the South Slough. The subcommittee also approved adding the best practices measure for boards and commissions. And finally, the Subcommittee on Natural Resources recommends House Bill 5043 be amended and reported out, do pass as amended. Thank you for your thoughtful consideration.
Further discussion, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill?
Colleagues, I'm concerned about this because we're looking at $221,000 in general fund. And you say, well, it's only $221,000 and what the heck, out of $14 billion, we could just go ahead and pass this and it's not going to make that big of a difference. However, we have not received the co-chair's budget yet. We don't know what it looks like, and we don't know what kind of an effect passing this bill is going to have on that budget. Hopefully this is the amount that will appear in the co-chair's budget. However, we don't know that for a fact at this particular point in time. So I am kind of sad to say that for that reason I'm going to vote against the budget for the DSL. Irrespective of how I may feel personally about them, I don't think that we should be approving budgets with general fund dollars until we have seen the co-chair's budget and we know what kind of an effect it's going to have on all of the other state programs. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For the discussion, Representative Garrod.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want a point of clarification.
Is this a question to the carrier?
No, it's not.
To the bill?
To the bill. I just want to make sure that everyone realizes that It's common for myself and Representative Girard to have our names mispronounced, and one is Girard and one is Girard, but we also both answer to Girard. So I think it'd be important that on this case I stand and say that Girard is opposed.
Thank you for that clarification that goes to the heart of the budget. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does Kerry yield?
Yields.
He does.
Can you tell us how much of those funds are that are in that budget are from the Common School Fund that are going to mean that money's not going to be available for education?
A very, very small amount.
Small compared to what?
It's an additional clarification. Does the carrier yield?
One moment, please. The good representative from Southwestern Oregon, the other funds total is $37,979,000, of which a very small percentage is used from the Common School Fund, but it isn't particularly broken out. Yeah.
Question or clarification?
Further question? Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
What I'm trying to get at, when I was on that committee, it was nearly $1 million was not going to go to schools because it's going to the South SLU, and we had asked them to start a program where they could start doing some of the funding through fees and programs to make that up so it wouldn't continue to come from our schools. And I just want to know how much we're spending today compared to, let's say, 2 years ago, and are they making any progress towards funding the South SLU without taking it from the kids?
Representative, I will correct my previous statement to you. There is $37,979,000 that was taken from the school fund, but state lands put $109.5 million in revenue distributions back into the Common School Fund. So that would give you an indication of approximately a $60 million advantage to the Common School Fund.
Further clarification?
Further questions? Carrier yield?
Carrier yields.
He does.
Good representative. I'm trying to figure out. I still haven't got there. About $1 million of common school money had been going into that budget last session. About how much now that you mentioned 60 million. I don't know what that is. That's the whole program of DSL. But what about that portion that goes to the South SLU? How much of that is common school dollars?
$2.5 million.
At a time, folks, when we're trying to fund
schools,
at a time we're trying to fund schools, I've got a question if how long we could continue to draw money off of that. Just figure what that ends up being in a 5 or 10 year period. A lot of money. And they've had opportunity for many, many years to become more self-sufficient. And I don't think they've made the progress that they should. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Burley.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Carrier yield?
Carrier yields.
He does.
Can you tell us, from the Elliott State Forest, what percent of the revenues is going into the cost of managing that forest in the last year that we have figures?
I can give you a percentage, Representative, about 40%.
48?
40.
40. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, the Department of State Lands does a lot of very good things. I support the department. I voted for this budget in subcommittee. But I raise this question because, and I believe the figure is almost 48%, of the funds that come off the Elliott State Forest, which has a constitutional mandate to maximize the benefit, to get money into our common school fund. This is money that goes to our schools to educate our kids. Almost half of the revenues are getting sucked up into the cost of managing that forest. To say it's excessive would be a gross understatement. You will hear more about this. I've got a bill that hopefully will get a hearing in the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee that addresses this issue. I think it's a huge issue, but notwithstanding that, notwithstanding the fact we don't have a co-chair's budget, I did support this bill and I will vote for this bill, but I just wanted to get this thing about the Elliott State Forest on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'm harking back to a time when I put together school budgets. And if I would come to the school board and say, please pass the textbook budget in January, then come in February and ask them to pass the activity budget and save until the very end the salary portion of the budget that would fund our teachers, I wouldn't be building a budget the next year. To put this budget in front of us before we have a look at what the total impact on the education budget will be is foolhardy to me. I will be voting no. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrard, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Chair. To the question that was posed by the good representative from Wilsonville, it is my understanding that the co-chair's budget will be announced sometime this week. So hopefully that will take care of his concerns in that regard. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boquist, how do you vote? Boquist votes no. House Bill 5043A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2187, relating to fees imposed for periodic sanitary surveys of drinking water systems.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2187. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2187 comes to you from the Energy and Environment Committee. And as such, it passed out of the committee with a unanimous vote and probably should have gone on the consent calendar. But the bill has a three-session history. And for that reason, I suggested that we bring it up and discuss it during this session. House Bill 2183 is basically a fee bill for the Department of Human Services in relationship to the testing of water supply systems. House Bill 2187 is the product then of a drinking water task force formed at the direction of the 2003 House Water Committee. The task force was formed because there was a considerable amount of opposition to the original bill, and the desire was to get consensus among the people affected by and the users before we move forward. The task force at that time was a diverse group representing many interests, and if not all of the interests of the people that might be affected by this. It was consisted of members from the League of Oregon Cities, the Special Districts Association, the Oregon Association of Water Utilities representing small water systems, The private-owned public water systems, the Conference of Local Health Officials, the League of Women Voters, the Manufacturers Housing Communities of Oregon, and the Department of Human Resources. The task force brought us a bill last session, which wound up in the Ways and Means Committee at the end of the session and didn't move forward. They're back this time with their basically original proposal from the 2005 session and bringing it to you, asking for your acceptance of the bill. House Bill 2187 authorizes then the fee for sanitary survey inspections of drinking water systems recommended by the task force. The fee schedule will be determined will be determined by stakeholders and was that were in the discussions of that task force. The water supply will pay the water supplier will pay the fee upon the conduct of the inspection. A sanitary inspections are important in both the water supplies and the in both the water supplier and the public, providing an independent review of the water system to identify any actual or potential hazards to drinking water and occurring that might occur without correction. House Bill 2187 is an important component of funding of the fully effective statewide program and is, as I said, encouraged by all of the stakeholders that are involved in the program. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I'd entertain any questions. Madam Speaker.
Excuse me.
For the discussion, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Carrier yields.
He does.
Thank you. Could you talk to us about the discussion in the policy committee as the bill would impact the very small water districts in the state, the districts that have, say, 100 and less people on them?
Yes, we did. Thank you for that question, and that question was addressed in committee, and the services for all public fees where there's more than 15 connectors, there is a fee of $150, and as it goes on up, the fee, as the number of connections to the water system goes up, the fee will increase up to the large communities in excess of 20,000. The fee would be $2,400.
May I ask a further question?
Further question? Will the carrier yield?
But of course.
He will.
Could you talk to us also about what the discussion was in committee around the other fees that are in addition to the connection fees, the testing fees?
No, we didn't get into other fees that water suppliers would have to make, only to those in connection with the sanitary service program.
Clarification?
Clarification? Will the carrier yield?
Yes.
He will.
The were there a number of other fees in the bill in addition to the connection fees? Were there fees around testing for different kinds of things that may be present in the water?
No, there were not.
Thank you.
Further discussion? See no one in the queue. Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Okay. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Lim, how do you vote? That's aye. House Bill 2187, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2237, relating to filing requirements for war veteran property tax exemptions.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2237A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 2237 is designed to simplify the lives of certain veterans or their surviving spouse. These disabled vets currently qualify for homestead exemptions on property taxes of from $15,000 to $18,000 per year. They are required now to file every year for this ongoing exemption. This bill removes the annual file requirement as long as any circumstances do not change. It simplifies their lives. It cuts down on just the paperwork exchange. It hopefully will make life a little easier for approximately 37,500 disabled Oregon vets or their surviving spouses. Things rarely change, and yet they are constantly yearly filing this paperwork. This would remove this paperwork burden, and if their circumstances don't change, they don't have to file annually. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Berger, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I just want it stated that I've reached an advanced age in life where regulatory burden is becoming more burdensome, so please help out some of these vets for us old folks' sake.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2237, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2314, relating to collection of debt and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2314. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2314 comes to you from the Committee on Business and Labor. This bill basically allows a public body or a person to recover the cost that they incur from the collection agency in the process of collecting a debt. This bill is really a clarification of a bill passed in 2003 which allowed public bodies to contract with collection agencies to recover fees. And this bill just clarifies that the public agency and or a person can charge, add on to that fee, the cost that the collection agency passes on to them. It, again, is just a simple clarification of the law. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields is off the floor. House Bill 2314, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2562, relating to implied consent.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2562. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2562 comes to you from the House Judiciary Committee, where it passed out unanimously. Under Oregon's current implied consent law, every person who operates a motor vehicle on public roadway in Oregon is expected to consent to chemical testing that can determine whether he or she is driving under the influence of intoxicants. The amount and type of intoxicants in a person's body can be measured by using breath, blood, and urine tests. Breath or blood tests must be used if the intoxicant is alcohol. A urine test must be used if the intoxicant is a controlled substance or inhalant. Currently, a person who refuses to take a breath test under the implied consent law is subject to a fine of at least $500, but not more than $1,000. But a person who refuses to take a blood or urine test is not subject to a fine. House Bill 2562 makes all refusals under implied consent subject to a fine. Under current law, when a person is cited for the refusal to submit to a breath test, the only revenue credited to the state police account is that which is collected by the Oregon State Police. House Bill 2562 makes a positive change in the law so that all citation revenue collected under this section is credited to the state police account. Other than alcohol drunk driving, the people driving under the influence is increasing. In 2005, 1,246 people were arrested for other than alcohol, driving under the influence other than alcohol. This is a good bill and deserves your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Off the floor. House Bill 2562, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2619, relating to public employee retirement.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2619. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, another bill from the Committee on Business and Labor. This bill is regarding the public employees' retirement system, and it is strictly for people who are police officers. It enables them to receive retirement credit for service as a public safety officer with another state or another political subdivision of another state before being employed in this position that entitled the member to credit in the system. This bill also requires that individual a lump sum payment to cover the full cost of the retirement credit. There is a minimal fiscal impact to the PERS system. The PERS system was in the committee. They took no position on the bill,
But we're not standing in the way. This bill was endorsed by the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, as well as the Oregon State Police Officers Association. This bill will be a great recruitment tool to attract police officers from other jurisdictions while we're trying to bolster our troops, especially in the state police officers, where are we going to get new police officers, and this is a tool for us to be able to attract those from another state. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in support of House Bill 2619, and that support is based on the language of page 1, lines 22 to 24, requiring payment by the member of the full cost to the retirement system, including all administrative costs. This language would include, but not be limited to, the additional monthly benefit based on the retirement credits that are being purchased, the subsequent cost of living adjustments on that benefit, the enhanced value of retirement credits worked within the system as a result of having the purchased credits added to a service requirement for retirement, the staff cost of calculating the amount to be paid, and the programming cost of requiring the non-taxable portion of the benefit payment to be calculated. All those are involved in implementing this bill, and my reading of the bill is that they would all be covered by the member, so I think it's a good bill. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Madam Speaker, colleagues, I spent some time this morning talking with the LFO analyst that deals with PERS and also with Stephen Delaney, who is the PERS representative, asking specifically, what are the consequences of this? Why do we need this? And basically the answer came back that since a police officer who would pay for up to 4 years of their of the PERS calculation would be paying full amount, it basically would affect someone that, say, had worked 21 or 22 years and wanted to retire at 25 years but didn't want to take a lesser than full retirement, and so they could pay the full cost of the difference up to 4 years so that they could retire at that point and still get the credit as if they had put in a full 25 years. But the key point that I was concerned about was, is there an adverse cost to the PERS plan, or is there an adverse cost to the citizens? And the answer was not really, except the only possibility would be if the person lived longer than actuarially expected, then there would be a benefit to that person, or if they died earlier, then there would be a benefit to the system. And so I'm satisfied that this is a good bill. I'll be voting yes.
Further discussion? Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I want to thank the good representative for his insight into that particular aspect of this bill. It does just allow up to 4 years, the ability of somebody to pay for up to 4 years of the credit, the retirement credit, and that individual can't collect that out-of-state pension and the 4 years of that one and this one at the same time. It just gives the ability for us to recruit officers who may only have 2 or 3 or 4 years in another state. They may not be vested in that plan, and they can buy into this plan, just as the representative said, to allow them to retire perhaps a little bit earlier in the PERS system. Again, I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. House Bill 2619, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2741, relating to investigation by District Attorney of physical injury.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2741. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, this is another bill that comes from the Judiciary Committee where it passed out unanimously. Currently, Oregon law gives district attorney and medical examiners the responsibility to investigate all human deaths. With this investigative authority is the power to control a crime scene to ensure preservation of any relevant evidence. In the cases where there is physical injury but not death, current law gives only the medical examiner the authority to investigate if the injury occurred under what is considered, quote, suspicious or unknown circumstances, unquote, and involved a knife, gun, pistol, or other deadly weapon. This is a problem when somebody shows up at the hospital unconscious and nobody knows exactly what happened and evidence may be lost. And it kind of goes back to the story about the question is asked in the penitentiary of how many prisoners does it take to throw another prisoner down the flight of stairs? And the answer is none. He tripped. And this is the problem in some of these cases where nobody knows what happened. And unless there's the authority to investigate, evidence could easily be lost. But this bill addresses two problems with the current law. First, it allows the district attorney as well as the medical examiner to conduct injury investigations. The concern is that if a crime occurred, there is likely evidence that should be preserved. The medical examiner's concern in injury cases is to save the victim, not to preserve evidence. Second, it expands existing law so that physical injury investigations can include all suspicious injuries. Further, many crimes or assaults happen through the use of an item that are not, quote, deadly weapons, unquote, under the law, such as hands, rocks, pipes, screwdrivers, and so on. House Bill 2741 also broadens the scope of law to include such circumstances. This bill has minimum fiscal impact, is a good bill, and deserves your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Barker, do you wish to close? Okay. He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 2741 is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2782 relating to precursor substances.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2782. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2782 comes from the Judiciary Committee by unanimous vote. As you know, last session, Oregon enacted our nation's most aggressive anti-meth precursor laws, House Bill 2485. Among other things, House Bill 2485 moved pseudoephedrine, the key to meth precursors, to the Schedule III prescription. The result of this effort has been quite dramatic in Oregon. In 2003, we had 473 meth houses. 2004, 448, 2005, 192, and last year that dropped down to 62 for the entire year, none in the month of December. So what we did was, in fact, very, very effective. In a report issued in November by the federal government, Oregon was recognized as not only taking the strongest action to control pseudoephedrine, but also as a state with the largest reduction in meth lab incidents in the nation. We virtually have eliminated most small toxic meth labs in Oregon. House Bill 2782 amends ORS 475-950. Precursor substances refer to chemicals needed to manufacture methamphetamine. Fed reports certain precursor substances transactions in the proper manner to the Oregon State Police as a Class A misdemeanor. House Bill 2782 simply repeals the need to report transactions of optical isomers. Good bill. Please vote yes.
Further discussion? Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. this question is in direct retaliation from an earlier attack from the good representative.
Is this a question of the carrier?
A question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Maybe.
I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah.
Good representative, could you explain to me what an optical isomer is, please?
According to the staff summary, an optical isomer refers to chemical species that are mirror images of one another. And Darian Stafford, our staff attorney, the last things that he said at the bottom of your staff summary report, I cannot and will not attempt to explain this phenomenon any further.
See no one further in the queue. Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2782, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the measure remaining on today's final reading of memorials and resolutions be carried over to its proper place on Tuesday, March 20th, 2007, calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 258 related to sentencing.
Bill read second time is passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading calendar be carried over to their proper place on the Tuesday, March 20th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Hunt.
Request unanimous consent to return to courtesies.
Representative Hunt requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies without objection.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Since we have been here, I'd like to extend courtesies to the House to a group that has come into the rear gallery who are visiting from the Milwaukee Senior Center. Welcome to the Capitol.
Welcome to the Capitol. Further announcements, Representative? Further courtesies. Are there any further courtesies? Representative Gelster, back to announcements.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Many of you are aware of the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force. What you may not be aware of is that in July 2005, the task force developed an advisory committee to provide guidance and assistance on the development and implementation of an agenda that would focus on preventing sexual violence against people with developmental disabilities. The task force, in collaboration with the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, because this is Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month, have declared this week, March 25th to 31st, as a week to raise awareness about sexual violence against people with developmental disabilities. So I hope that we can all take the opportunity to think about the specific vulnerabilities that people with developmental disabilities have in terms of being victims of sexual violence, and also how our historic lack of education offered to these individuals puts them at risk of becoming violators of sexual boundaries. So thank you for paying attention to this week.
Further announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. colleagues, on your desk today, I copied for you a couple articles from the Oregonian. One of them is entitled, Racial Incidents in Eugene Drive Lesson Home to Portland. House District 44 in North Portland is the proud home of Roosevelt High School and the Rough Riders, who finished second in the state championship. And as many of you have probably seen the articles, and I urge you to take a few minutes today to read the ones that I've passed out if you haven't seen them yet, I wanted to say that I'm very proud of the students at Roosevelt High School. Not just because they won the city championship and they came in second in the state tournament, but despite a week of very uncomfortable situations and racial harassment, they were able to transcend that and win the sportsmanship award during the tournament. This has been a very educational couple weeks for them, and I'm very proud of the way they have handled this, not only the school administrators, but the students themselves. And I hope we take this as an opportunity to think about the fact that racism in our state, in our country, is still alive and well. It might not be as overt, it might be very subtle, but we as elected leaders have an obligation to not only think about this, but do what we can in our communities to continue the conversation about race, because we are all negatively impacted when racism and intolerance is not dealt with in our communities. And again, I just want to say that I can't be more proud of the students, not only those players who were in Eugene, but all the students who went down for the games and the way they have handled this situation. It's unfortunate, it's very sad, and I think we have to keep pressing to deal with these issues in our communities, and I urge you to read that set of articles today. Thank you.
For the remonstrances, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, as you know, this is Women's History Month. Today we're going to honor Sandra Day O'Connor. Ms. O'Connor was the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court. A moderate conservative, she was known for her dispassionate and meticulously researched opinions. She received her undergraduate and law degrees in 1952 from Stanford University, where she met the future Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, William Rehnquist. When she graduated, she was unable to find employment in a law firm because she was a woman. She was offered a job as a secretary. Sandra Day O'Connor pursued private practice in Arizona and became Assistant Attorney General for the state. In 1969, she was elected as a Republican to the Arizona Senate, rising to the position of Majority Leader, the first woman in the United States to occupy such a position. In July 1981, and colleagues, I remember this just like it was yesterday. It was so moving to me. In July 1981, President Ronald Reagan nominated her to fill the vacancy left in the Supreme Court by the retirement of Justice Potter Stewart. Described by Reagan as a person for all seasons, she was confirmed unanimously by the Senate and was sworn in as the first female justice on September 25, 1981. She quickly became known for pragmatism and was considered, along with Justice Anthony Kennedy, a decisive swing vote in the Supreme Court's decisions. She attempted to fashion workable solutions to major constitutional questions, and in her decisions in election law, she emphasized the importance of equal protection claims, declared unconstitutional district boundaries that are unexplainable on grounds other than race. Justice O'Connor retired from the Supreme Court and replaced by Samuel Alito in 2006. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:30 a.m., Tuesday, March 20th, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House stand adjourned until 10:30 a.m., Tuesday, March 20th, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, March 20th, 2007. We are adjourned.